Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, on Wednesday, August 19, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A local government minister, Sevier Kasukwere, blocks the Harare City Council from firing 3,000 workers, saying the local authority's move was unjustified.
I'm surprised if the city of Harare is moving in that direction. I'll be very surprised because the resolutions, as if they've come to my office, will certainly not accept that.
After suffering for years from social isolation and depression, some Zimbabwean women in Mashonaland and West Province are celebrating the launch today of an obstetric fistula campaign offering free surgeries.
Mainly because the people that are affected by obstetric fistula are the very marginalized young girls who are turned into brides before their time.
And Bulawayo Council Police today continued their war with vendors operating from undesignated areas and impounding their wares.
Stay tuned for these stories and much more, including results of today's Premier Soccer League matches played around the country.
A local government minister, Sevier Kasukwere, has blocked the Harare City Council from firing 3,000 workers, saying the local authority's move was unjustified. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from the capital.
The Harare City Council yesterday dismissed 3,000 employees, saying it wanted to trim its workforce and trim expenditure and channel resources towards service delivery. But less than 24 hours after the decision was made, local government minister Kasukwere says the city council's decision is null and void.
I'm surprised if the city of Harare is moving in that direction. I'll be very surprised because the resolutions, as if they've come to my office, will certainly not accept that, because I think there is a better chance for us to turn around the city of Harare with people collecting their rents, people making sure that the services that are given by council are paid for, going into development, land sales and so forth. City of Harare has a good chance. We are very in a unique situation where at the top, people are milking, but at the bottom, how do you fire the lowest who have not been spending that much? In fact, right now as I'm speaking, some of them are 3, 4, 5 months behind in terms of their salaries. We cannot continue pushing the pain. I think it is insensitive for the city fathers, and I'll engage the city father, city mayor, and make a resolution which will not make the people suffer.
However, Harare Mayor Bernard Manyenyeni says the minister has jumped the gun.
It's not yet with the minister. It's not yet even with the mayor. When it gets to the minister, it will get to the minister. We will get to the minister when we get to the minister. At the moment, it's still at committee level of council. Are we together? At this point, it's still at committee level of council, and at committee level, everything is confidential.
Meanwhile, the Harare Provincial Chairperson of the MDCT, Eric Murai, released a statement saying his party would not allow the MDCT-controlled city council to dismiss any employee without any severance packages. Murai said the council's move to fire the workers without benefits was, quote, arbitrary and insensitive. At the same time, the youth wing of the opposition party's provincial chapter issued another statement calling for the 5-year suspension of the Harare mayor, the chairpersons of the council's human resources, information and finance committees. The party organ said it has set up a committee to investigate the goings on at townhouse. The decision by the Harare City Council to dismiss its workers came just before the Labor Laws Amendment Bill that allows workers to get severance packages when dismissed sailed through Parliament last night. The bill is now waiting for approval by the Senate before President Robert Mugabe signs it into law. The Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions say more than 20,000 workers have been affected by the Supreme Court ruling that allows employers to fire their workers on 3 months' notice without any severance packages. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
After suffering for many years from social isolation and depression, Zimbabwean women in Mashonaland West Province are smiling following the launch today of an obstetric fistula campaign at Chinoy Hospital this afternoon, providing free surgeries to correct their condition that some women have lived with for over 20 years. Arthur Chikoriwa has more details from the provincial capital.
The surgeries, which are being done by foreign specialist surgeons with the help of local doctors, started today with three women going under the knife to correct a condition that has afflicted them for years. Obstetric fistula, a hole in the birth canal sustained during childbirth, is a common maternal morbidity that impacts thousands of women in developing countries each year. It affects between 50,000 and 100,000 women each year, mostly in developing countries. Mostly the women who live through these complications may suffer incontinence, infections, kidney disease, and a foot drop, which reduce the ability to walk as a result of nerve damage. Additionally, the majority of women with obstetric fistula deliver stillborn babies. The condition is entirely preventable and has been eliminated in Western countries since the turn of the 20th century, yet the launch in Chinoy today of the campaign to help end obstetric fistula in Zimbabwe. National coordinator of the outreach program, Fortune Mabandi, with the Women and the Health Alliance International, says women have been reaching out in huge numbers wanting to get operated on. She said for this campaign, over 300 women who have been living with the condition for years have signed up for surgery.
Mainly because the people that are affected by obstetric fistula are the very marginalized young girls who are turned into brides before their time. So they've been given a new lease of life by having this surgery. Yes, they are, because this young girl is not yet equipped to give birth. She's still underdeveloped. Her body is forced to do something that's not the right time.
Mabandi says it is said that young poor girls who have been given off as in early marriage are some of the women turning up for help. Mabandi says although they started slow with only three operations today, the campaign hopes by the end of August more than 45 women would have been operated at the hospital. Mabandi said the foreign surgeons are going to capacitate local doctors so that the program can continue to help long-suffering women long after they have left the country.
We follow whatever normal procedure the hospital requires us to follow. We don't bring in new procedures. The normal admission procedures, the only special thing is we're bringing in a specialist surgeon who's also coming to build capacity within our doctors here in Zimbabwe.
Women and the Health Alliance International is working in conjunction with the Chinoy Provincial Hospital, the Ministry of Health and their partners from the United Nations on the Obstetric Fistula campaign. The program, which will run from August 18 to August 31, is looking to assist women throughout the country with free transportation, boarding, consultations and the surgeries being provided by the organizations. An obstetric fistula is a serious internal organ injury sustained during childbirth, leaving women with urinary and other internal scars. Some women have lived with the condition for over 20 years. According to WOW, so far 70 women have been assisted with fistula operations since the beginning of the year. The WOW program is part of a five-year national campaign to end obstetric fistula in Zimbabwe. Reporting for Studio 7 in Chinoy, this is Arthur Chigoriwa.
A prominent Harare lawyer and politician, Tendai Biti, has joined the growing list of those calling for the total abolition of the death penalty in the country. the new constitution abolished the mandatory death sentences and limited penalty to cases of murder committed in aggravating circumstances. It bars death sentences for women and for men aged under 21 or over 70 at the time of committing the crime. Zimbabwe carried out its last execution on 22 July 2005, yet an estimated 95 to 120 prisoners remain on death row in the country. Amnesty International called the 10-year hiatus in execution as, quote, milestone for the protection of the right to life and the eventual abolition of the death penalty in Zimbabwe. Amnesty International Director for Southern Africa, Depros Muchena, says the death penalty is a violation of the right to life and Zimbabwean authorities must take urgent steps to get rid of the hangman's noose and abolish the death penalty altogether. Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who is also the minister responsible for justice, has also vowed to take the lead in lobbying for the abolishment of the death penalty in the country. BT tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the death row inmates must be pardoned as he goes back to the trenches to fight for people's rights.
There are about 120 people that are on death row. There are so many that the normal prison that is designed specifically to cater for death row prison, Harare Central Prison, can't cater. So there's been an overflow of death row prisoners, and about 20 of them are now located at Chikurubi prison.
You are taking interest in these death row prisoners. What exactly do you want to be done?
Well, I'm a human rights activist and I don't believe in capital punishment. So I've taken it upon myself with others the duty to try and save as many of them as possible using the law. So I've got three cases that are pending right now. One group is the one that says making people wait for so long on death row without executing them amounts to cruel and inhuman treatment, which is an infringement of Section 53 of the Zimbabwean Constitution. The second round of cases that I've brought is to say that the new constitution in Section 48 says there's a right to life. The new constitution then says a law may be passed that may provide for death penalty in aggravated circumstances. That law has not been passed. So I'm now saying that anyone to be executed now can be executed, but that law that is envisaged by the Constitution in Section 48.2 is not there. The third interesting case which I'm trying to do, and this one I'm really, really interested in, I'm representing this chap called Obadiah Makoni. He killed his girlfriend, whom he found in flagranto 20 years ago, and he was convicted of murder, but because of age, you are sentenced to life. So I'm trying to argue that a life sentence does not mean life. Life doesn't mean life. And that an irreducible sentence of life imprisonment with no prospect of release either on parole or on pardon is not constitutional.
That was prominent Harare lawyer and former finance minister Tendai Biti on the line from Harare with Blessing Zulu.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metom Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
results from Castle Laga Premier Soccer League matches played today and other sports news.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
A convicted whistleblower, Charles Manning, has been found guilty of violating prison rules and will receive 3 weeks of recreational restrictions at the Kansas Military Prison, where she is serving a 35-year sentence for leaking classified documents to WikiLeaks, the attorney said.
Human Rights Watch leveled harsh criticism today at Egypt's new anti-terrorism law, saying the measure has an overly broad definition of what constitutes a terrorist act and leaves Egyptians open to stiff sentences for things that many may amount to civil disobedience.
American scholar, assistant English professor Jean Mary Jackson of Johns Hopkins University says she is currently carrying out research in Zimbabwe focusing on democracy in the Southern African nation. Jackson, who returned from Zimbabwe recently, where she visited several towns, cities, and rural areas, says her interest in writing an academic book, Terms of Engagement, Form and Response in the Age of Post-Democracy, was influenced by an abundance of open Zimbabwean discussions on various issues on social media and other platforms. Jackson says the research will look into democratic processes in the country, which are hardly understood by most Americans. She tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube she is even a follower of Professor Jonathan Moe's Twitter feed, Alex Magaisa's blog, and other media threads.
Research at this point mainly means intensive shona, and then talking with as many writers and publishers as possible for work that I'm doing on a book at the moment.
Now, what can you say generally about the people of Zimbabwe?
I mean, I think I can tell you why I ended up being so attracted to Zimbabwe as a research site, and why I became so consumed by Zimbabwean literature and by Shona literature in particular. And people oftentimes in the States are very confused when I tell them this, because they've got a particular vision of Zimbabwe, often as being a bit closed off. They think very clear, but in fact very incomplete sense of what the government there is like. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I think that Zimbabweans tend to be wonderful arguers. So the most popular example of that, that people can relate to, you know, I think who aren't academics or literary scholars, is all of these open discussion hashtags on Facebook and Twitter. Something even like Jonathan Moyo's Twitter feed, regardless of how you feel about Jonathan Moyo or any of his past machinations, I think just shows an incredible willingness and inclination on the part of Zimbabweans to kind of let fair and free argument flow in spaces where you wouldn't necessarily expect it. Zimbabwe actually has an extremely healthy and measured intellectual culture, a culture of argument, in a way that, frankly, I haven't found comparatively to be the case in even South Africa.
Tell us exactly what type of project you are doing in Zimbabwe.
I'm working on a second book project right now, which is called Terms of Engagement, Form and Response in the Age of Post-Democracy. And it basically looks at all of these conversations about Zimbabwe as a failed state, obviously a very controversial term, not one that I'm invested in any way, but thrown about a lot to mean quite a lot of different things. And at the same time, a lot of critical theorists, so people who consider themselves to be political theorists, political philosophers, philosophers of modernity, these big kind of humanities fields, are talking about this kind of grander age of post-democracy, which isn't to say an age in which democracies don't function or exist, but a time in which we're beginning to question what democracy as a system is actually meant to be doing. How is it supposed to function in the long term if people are still dealing with all sorts of problems that it was meant to solve? And so what I'm doing is organizing a number of narrative genres to arise both within and surrounding Zimbabwe over the past 25 years or so, into groups of texts that deal with this question, and particularly that deal with the question of how do we argue now? What are the conceptual bottom lines that drive the types of arguments we have? And how does a place like Zimbabwe, which has a very persistent intellectual culture, even in the midst of severe political and economic difficulties, sort of model a way of thinking about how to make intellectual culture move forward in the world at large?
That was Assistant English Professor Jean Mary Jackson of Johns Hopkins University speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Johns Hopkins University, USA.
Bulawayo City Council police today continued their war with vendors operating from undesignated areas and impounding their wares. The offensive has angered many vendors because the council had vowed to only remove them after securing proper base for them. The vendors accused the city police of assaulting them. Those affected are mainly vendors operating from 5 Street and Jason Moyo. One of those who had their wares confiscated is Godfrey Moyo, who says the local authority should have relocated them as promised instead of removing them violently and without alternative places.
All of a sudden, city council has descended on the vendors and there is really chaos. People are crying. A lot of wares were confiscated. They were taken and we tried to make a follow-up. Where are the goods? But now it's no avail. And up to now, people are still crying. This morning, the city council, with assistance of the ZRMP, the Black Boots guys, actually they were still taking the goods.
What goods were you selling personally, and how much would you say you have lost?
Jackets, shoes. Look at this. Oh, yeah. These guys, actually, they've just come and they're starting running away. And they are coming, and I can't talk to you right now. I'm running.
That was Bulawayo vendor Godfrey Moyo on the line with reporter Ntungameli Nkomo from Bulawayo. Studio 7 was unable to talk to Bulawayo Mayor Martin Moyo as his phone went unanswered.
Meanwhile, in the third part of our week-long series looking at the country's tattered economy, we are focusing on the country's vendors. As the country's economic problems persist, some ordinary Zimbabweans, most of whom have now resorted to the informal sector to try and earn a living, say they fear that the country might descend into turmoil if the problems facing the nation are not solved immediately. Our correspondent, Chaurai Shava, brings us more.
Well, now a resident, Thomas Ngara, one of the thousands in the country, who now is also living through vending illegally on the streets of Zimbabwe's second biggest street. The 32-year-old Ngara says he has been vending for over 5 years now after losing his job at one of the textile companies that had gone into liquidation. Although the money he gets from selling mobile recharge cards and cigarettes is increasingly becoming inadequate for the upkeep of his unemployed wife and 2 children, Ngara says he has no choice but to remain in his state as there is virtually no alternative because there are no jobs in the country. His colleague, Douglas Dure, laments the same, adding, if things continue the way they are, he won't be able to put food on the table for his family or to send his children to school. Dure says on the streets there is a mix, with some vendors being degreed and others having completed various levels of secondary and high school education. The situation
is
described
as
really
sad.
There isn't much else we can do because jobs are difficult to get, and this is what is compelling us to be vending on the streets. But in reality, there is nothing going. Things are getting worse by the day. Money is not circulating. It looks like the few who have the money keep it to themselves.
Musa Wenko Sinyoni is the president of the Bulawayo province of the Zimbabwe Chamber of Informal Economy Association. For the chair, Nyoni, who has been buying and selling clothes for nearly 13 years, told Studio 7 that in the past she would realize good returns from her business, but now she hardly breaks even because more and more people have changed the trade, with clients becoming fewer by the day, as most people have little or no disposable income due to the prevailing economic problem. She says the organization has thousands of registered members, but many of them are now failing to pay up their annual $6 subscription fee.
We had a huge membership base of about 10,000 people, but the problems that I face in my work as a trader are the same as those experienced by other members.
Nyoni says, although the country experienced serious economic problems during 2007-2008, marked by a shortage of goods, due to hyperinflation, she feels those were better than now, as most people were still able to buy food from their own country. She says the current problems are different in that although there are plenty of goods, people have no money.
Life is getting really tough.
and we are clueless as to what to do. And because more workers are losing their jobs, more people are resorting to vending on the streets. In the end, there will be no one to sell to.
The prevailing problems are cross-cutting, also affecting small to medium businesses, which in other countries have provided a basis for economic growth, even contributing to national coffers through taxes. Studio 7 tried to reach Zanani Malala, the chairperson of the Ilawaye branch of the Zimbabwe National Chamber of Commerce, or ZNCC, to find out how businesses are coping. Although Malawa had initially agreed to an interview, he later said he was busy and also failed to respond to questions that he had asked to be sent to him. The organization's vice president for Matabeleland and Province, Christian Mugoba, also said he was busy. But the ZNCC recently called on the government to address the country's problems urgently, as further stalling could be catastrophic for the country. Regis Munyoro runs an electrical contracting company. He says his company is facing serious cash flow problems because of failure to get clients. He says the few clients he gets are finding it difficult to pay for services provided, adding that he may be forced to close shop if the current economic decay persists.
It's very difficult. It's very challenging. The jobs we are getting, as compared to other years previously, we used to get a few jobs on a much regular basis. These days, it's very rare to get jobs. Even when you get the jobs, it's a hassle to get payment.
He says if left unchecked, the country's economic climate will lead to more company closures, which he says could ultimately affect the country's banking sector, resulting in total collapse. But Tambo says Zimbabweans are resilient and peace-loving people, and he doesn't foresee any unrest or care. Tambo says the government needs to urgently revise policies like the indigenization law and, on the other hand, mend its relations with Western countries to attract the much-needed foreign direct investment to create jobs that will take the graduate vendors back into gainful employment. We see the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund having a major role to play in the recovery of the economy, but say Zimbabwe must first honor its debt and also get its priorities right by channeling any loans from the multilateral financial institutions into capital expenditure. But Tambo disagrees with calls for Zimbabwe to declare itself a highly indebted poor country, or HIPIC, as one way of trying to get out of the current economic mess.
Yes, we are highly indebted, but we're not a poor country as far as I'm concerned, because we've already admitted we have some of the biggest resources of literally anything that we can think about. Let's not take that route.
During the 2008 crisis, the government was quick to adopt the multi-currency regime when the nation was on the brink of unrest. Some observers say such turmoil could be a reality this time around if government does not explicitly avert the continuing crisis. It remains to be seen if the government will heed or hear the ordinary people's calls to channel energy towards economic revival and nothing more to save the country from total collapse. Reporting for Studio 7 from Lawayo, this is Taurai Shava.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will lead discussions about the Labour Amendment Bill and related issues.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
Briefly in sports news, here are the latest results from Premier League matches played today. Dynamos beat Triangle 2-0, Chapungu 1, Harare City 1, ZPC Kariba 1, Haumine 1, and Dongo Sawmills 0, Flame Lily 0.
Now to recap today's top stories.
Local Government Minister Sevia Kasukuere blocks the Harare City Council from firing 3,000 workers.
After suffering for years from social isolation and depression, some Zimbabwean women in Mashonaland West Province are celebrating the launch today of an obstetric fistula campaign offering free surgeries.
That's all for tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
and I'm Jonga Kandemire.